Aloha!
Mahalo, bitches!
It's your pals Alex and Kurt back again! How's it going, Kurt?
It's good, man. I just went to my little convenience store. It's actually just a corner store in the ghetto. And I bought two things. I bought coffee, and he rang it up, and I was like, oh, I need one more thing. And I bought, like, a six-pack of toilet paper. So they know how I'm spending my morning.
What's he doing this morning?
Oh, just drinking coffee and shitting all day.
Taking a shit.
Taking a nice, lofty, goopy shit.
Did Jay-Z get in a fight with Beyonce's... Beyonce's sister?
First of all, her name sounds like a sandwich. That tastes horrible.
I'll take a Solange sandwich with mustard.
With a side of sadness.
I don't know. Did they fight? Apparently this happened a couple of days ago. I'm obviously not in the tabloids, so I don't pay attention.
I'm not in the tabloids either, so I can't comment on it.
They probably got in a fight. I bet he beat her. Probably.
Took a Chris Brown. She probably said something she shouldn't have, like, you know what, you shouldn't talk to my sister like that. And he's like, shut up, bitch, I own the Knicks. And then he slapped her.
He owns the Nets. Owned the Nets, I think. I don't know. Obviously, we don't know much pop culture. But I do know that, Italian prisoners are getting 3 days off their sentence for each book they read.
What kind of books are they reading? Are they reading the Bible, like long books? Or are they reading like six Clifford the Big Red Dog books and just destroying just cheating the system as prisoners do?
Do they have to take tests after they finish every book?
They should. How do they know they finished the book?
They have to write a book report?
How do they know they finished the book? Do they just close the book and like, I'm done?
Today, I read Holes. And Holes is about this guy named Stanley and his friend Zero. And they dig holes and run away. All right, you know it. There's 3 days off.
They dig holes. Oh, you read it.
Huh? Good. Well, this week we had Adam Lash on the podcast, comedian, sketch comic. Jack of all trades. And normally, I'd like to say I'm a jack of all trades. I'd like to say I dabble in different things.
Really, what trades?
Jack of all trades and a master of none. Adam appears to be a jack of all trades and a master at most of them.
Yes.
So
Very good, dude. Very good to talk to. He's got a bunch of web series. I checked them out last night. They're fucking hilarious.
Seriously, go check out Bloodline. That's hilarious. He's the funniest guy in it.
Yeah, it's a little cool concept. I liked it.
Make sure you give us a follow on Twitter at Pass the Gravy Pod. You can follow me at 790 Alex M, and you can follow Curtis at Curtis Chafin. If you want to follow Adam, he is at the Adam Lash, and you can go to his website, AdamLashComedy.com.
Yeah, he's really good. So I realized that I'm terrible at reading out loud. I can read to myself because I'm my only critic, but like, have you ever been reading out loud and like three sentences in, you're just like, fuck.
I didn't pronounce just anything that, right.
Just like, or you like stutter, you're just like, fuck. Like that just like clouds your mind and you just start reading even worse and you're like, I'm not even halfway done with what I'm reading. Which I don't know why I'm reading to people. People should be able to read themselves. I don't hang out with children, so there's not a necessity to read. You know?
Be the guy that just goes into the bar and just takes a book. He's like, all right, today we're reading To Kill a Mockingbird.
I hate it when people bring like books to the park and they're reading and it's so bright outside that you know they can barely see the page.
Yeah.
You know what I'm talking about? And they're like just sitting there reading like dogs like run and jump on them. And they're like, I'm trying to read here. Like, this isn't a fucking library. You had a park.
Why would a dog just jump on me in the middle of a park?
Cowboys and Indians fought on the soil years ago. Years. And you're reading it. You're reading
shit.
There's
no place for literature.
You're reading your romantic comedy shit book.
I always wanted to write a book. But
about what?
I don't know. But like, I would always like... I would get like two pages into it. This is fucking boring.
I write down a bunch of stuff. I have my little notebook. And if anyone ever like steals my notebook, they're going to think I'm the craziest fucking person in the world. I try to write like a horror movie screenplay, and I was just like,
what?
It was so bad. Yeah. Just like a page, just like I had a thought. I read, because horror movies, like, you can write it as fucked up as it wants to be. I was reading, I'm like, this is too fucked up.
No one's gonna see this.
This looks like something you'd see on TV, like something gets uncovered 30 years later that a dictator was doing. Just horrible things. I was like, yeah, I'm gonna... So if anyone finds my book, finds my little notebook, it's gonna be like, they're like, this guy needs to go to jail. This guy is worse than Charles Manson. This guy's worse than that guy.
I don't know, that guy was pretty bad.
Charles Manson, there's like, I watched a doc, because I got interested in the topic. Like, I didn't know what happened. It happened long, probably before my time.
Definitely and, before your time.
And I fucking watched that shit. It was just fucking, the shit they did was so horrible. It was very interesting. I finally got to see that shit, which isn't a good thing, but it was good to be like have some knowledge about it.
Would you rather hang out with Charles Manson or Marilyn Manson?
Marilyn Manson with a friend, and we just trashed
with him a friend.
Look at this motherfucker. He's got fucking makeup on. Nigga looks like he just got slapped in the face with a pancake.
Have you seen Californication?
I have not.
There's an episode in there where like the main character's hanging out with all these rock stars, and Marilyn Manson ends up being there, and he takes a shit on somebody's floor in their house and just makes it seem...
That's funny.
They play him up to be just as insane as he appears.
Shit on someone's floor, that's hilarious. Are you kidding me? Like, you go into a room, like, there's shit on the floor, and I don't have a dog. Where's this shit come from?
Did somebody bring a dog in here?
Who ate corn today? Marilyn, did you eat corn? There's corn in this shit.
No, I didn't eat corn. I don't think that's how it sounds like.
I just sang about it and slipped my wrists. Because corn is sad.
I don't like that band.
I don't think anybody likes that band.
they used to, though.
Yeah, they're like the national band of Iowa.
We forgot that they aren't really good anymore. We're just in Iowa.
Remember that? Remember that time that we liked Korn? Let's not write about that in our history books. Like the way Jeremy doesn't write about the Holocaust and theirs.
It was a bad time.
I'll say the Holocaust is worse than Iowa liking Korn.
I would say that too. That's safe to say. Did Germany really not write about that in their book?
Dude, it's like they don't talk about it. If you mention it, you're the dick of the day. Like, you're an asshole.
Yeah, about that Holocaust thing. It's a sensitive subject.
They're like, don't like you. Like, oh, remember that Nazi thing? They're like, yeah, we don't talk about that.
What about what Nazi thing? I don't know. Who's Hitler?
Who is he? The guy with the mustache? Yeah, nobody has a mustache.
That guy was fucking weird. Why do you think nobody has mustaches like him anymore, huh?
Or that shitty bowl cut that was too long.
I guess him and Charlie Chaplin are the only two people in the world that could ever pull that mustache off.
But they were around the same time period, so, like, nobody, like...
He ruined it for Charlie Chaplin.
Charlie Chaplin saw that and was like,
fucking dictator.
How many Jews did you kill? God damn it, I gotta get a haircut. God, fuck, too many Jews. I need a haircut.
All right, well, why don't we bring you our interview with Adam Lash? We're gonna take a quick 30-second break and let you hear this podcast with...
Hello, podcast fans. Adam Carolla here. I'm leading the fight against patent trolls who are threatening this medium. It's not about me. It's about the podcast you're listening to right now. If I go down, this show could be next. Visit fundanything.com/patent troll for more information on how you can keep podcasting alive. Thank you and mahalo.
I'm a working man. I gotta pay my bills.
These guys were pimping it like it was candy.
A pack of wild dogs took over and successfully ran a Wendy's.
Oh, look at me, the millionaire who goes to see doctors.
You
should just smile and follow me.
You filthy animal.
What is this, a prey?
The game is cool, but it's crazy.
What in God's holy name are you blathering about?
The only thing I think of when I think of my kids growing up in this country, if they say, Dad, what do we have left that's American-owned? And I say, son, I mean, there's not much to choose from, but that's what we have Pabst Blue Ribbon for.
Child, please.
We're here with Adam Lash, comedian, sketch comic, writer.
Oh,
Sure, yeah.
Jack of all trades.
Yes.
What would
you say? A little bit enough of everything.
What would you say you are most? Would you say you're more sketch comedy or more stand up, more writing?
I am primarily a stand up comic, but over the years I have dabbled in sketch and all sorts of things at this point. So yeah, I think I started as like I'm a stand up and I'm an author and I'm an actor and a sketch guy, and now I'm starting to kind of get into improv a little bit. So you kind of, yeah, once you start down one road, you kind of end up in all the other ones too.
You're a busy guy.
Yeah, it gets that way.
What do you find most enjoyable? Like, what is your favorite, aspect
of all the,
yeah,
of all the disciplines? I love stand up. It's so pure and good, and when it works, there is nothing better on the planet. Because you're right there with the people. It's an instant reaction. It's a shared communal event. It's just because, you can tell the same jokes. You can tell the same jokes over and over and over again every night. And, it changes from night to night. But when they're hitting and when it's good, oh, man, it's just.
It's a good feeling. Like, it's all coming together type thing.
You're, kind of walking on air for a minute. Just, it's just so good. It's why people stick with it, because it's literally a drug.
That is the one common thing, talking to comedians and listening to other people talk to them, is that if they have their actors, even big-time, A-list actors, they're like, stand-up's my favorite thing to do. It doesn't matter, how big, or, if they just started, they've been in it 20 years, and they're, kind of on the edge of their career, there's nothing that compares to stand-up. And I think that's a pretty cool aspect.
How did you find out you were funny? Let's start with that.
Oh, that's a really... Well, I was told by my parents, but especially my mom, that I was always cracking... They were horrible, horrible jokes. But since, three, I would try to just, twist to play on words or whatever. And she always told me I was funny. But when, truly funny, maybe I should have a career in this, it wasn't until college. I went to Virginia Tech during the Michael Vick. Yeah, thank you. During the Michael Vick years. So that was our heyday, which is kind of awesome. And I started working for their student-run television station. And one of the guys there had a sketch show. And he had me on a bunch of different... There was a sports center type show, and there was a news show. And since there was only 20 people working the whole thing, everyone had to rotate around to different jobs. Uh-huh. So sometimes I did camera, and sometimes I directed a little bit, but sometimes I was in front of the camera reading off a teleprompter, and I would just kind of goof off on camera. I was reading the script as well, but I guess naturally funny and just wanted to say things a certain way, or just my intonation would kind of get the crew to laugh. And anytime things fucked up on camera, I would just kind of blow it off and keep going. And people laughed and said, "Oh, you're really funny." I like, "Oh, cool. Thanks." I knew I was. Because people, you talk to your friends and stuff like that, and in conversations, you kind of, a little bit of the jokes or whatever, more so than others. But to actually have, strangers and be on cameras, they're like, "Oh, no, you should, let's do a comedy thing." So we made a comedy show specifically for me. And it was like, "This is great. I think I should do this." Because it's just so much fun.
Yeah, I bet. I hear a lot of people that are not comedians, and I hear from a bunch of comedians, they're like, "Oh, I'm a funny guy." Some people come up to you and tell you, "I'm a funny guy. My friends say I'm funny." Is it what's the difference really between being able to be a funny guy with your friends and then a funny guy on stage? Is there a difference?
Oh, there is a huge difference. Because when I started out 10 years ago, and everyone, you know, a lot of times people start out, I still hear it nowadays when going to open mics and just practicing, is people like, oh, you know, my friends say this is funny, or, you know, my friends think I'm funny, that's why I'm trying this out. And it's like, oh, I mean, yeah, there's art to it, but when you're on stage, because it's all the craft, really, because there's a formula to it. I'm sure you guys are aware. There's, you know, the formula behind all the jokes and humor and stuff like that, where you have inside jokes with your friends, you have common experiences you can call back to. But when you don't, you're just talking to strangers, you need to be able to communicate clearly what your idea is, how it differs from what people think the norm is, and then a punchline. And there's just, it's so drastically, it's a different muscle than just conversational one-on-one with your friends, you know, sitting around with a beer.
Yeah.
Yeah, because, I mean, you're on stage under lights with a microphone in your hand. That automatically changes the context of everything you're saying.
Yeah, you can't be like, hey, guys, remember that one time? And everyone's like, no, we don't.
And you'd be surprised, or maybe not, how many new comics kind of start out that way. Hey, remember the thing from last week, everybody? Or I guess you kind of had to be there, right? I'm like, yes, we did. That's why your joke totally bombed and no one is laughing.
We just don't get it.
So you interned at the Daily Show. How was that? What was your specific job?
How'd you get that internship?
Well, I was actually an illegal intern there because what happened was I graduated college in 2002. Oh, God, that was... I'm old. Jeez. And my generation of guys from college, like, we weren't prepared at all for the real world, because when we all went in the late 90s, everyone's like, oh, my God, the economy is amazing. Everyone's going to have jobs. Everyone's going to be rich. Hooray. But then horrible, horrible shit happened.
It didn't happen.
It didn't happen at all. Like, everyone got out.
The opposite happened.
Right? Yeah. Everyone gets out of college and it's like, okay, so where's my job? I was told there would be jobs here.
I had these loans to pay off.
Right. Oh, it's so many loans. And it was just like, we just had to show up. And that's all we needed, to be like, hi, I graduated. Here's my diploma. Where's my job? And there were no jobs. And like, no one knew what to do. We weren't prepared at all for job hunting or interviews or anything like that. And in college, when I started working for the television station, like, I realized I wanted to work for television, do the things. And since I was on camera a bunch, I figured, well, I should just continue to be on camera because I'm an amazing talent, because I was at my college that of 20,000 people. So obviously, I'm ready for the whole world to know who I am. But then I went home to Fairfax, tried to find television jobs in Washington, D.C., with no success, because I had no idea no connections, no idea how to find a job in television. And then my girlfriend at the time said, hey, you know, the Daily Show needs interns. Why don't you just write to them? Since I did a Daily Show type show in college, I was like, okay. So I wrote them a cover letter and sent them my resume, which had absolutely nothing on it. Just, hey, I love you guys. I modeled my show at college after you. I would love to work there, and because I would love to, you know, do that for my career. And then they called me up for an interview, and I dressed like to the nines, like a super professional, and I roll into the offices. And this is back before Colbert, so that was where in Colbert's offices now.
Okay,
where they were back then, and everyone's just like in jeans and t-shirt, like just chilling. Like, it's just they don't even care. And I go into the intern coordinator's office, and they just ask me one question, which is, hey, do you want to work here? I was like, I absolutely want to work here. Yes.
Great interview. Great interview.
Right. That's it. That was it. Hi, how you doing?
You got it.
Yeah. And I was like, we talked for like 10 minutes, and I was like a super noob. I had no idea how the city worked or how internships worked. Because, like, do you guys help with housing or all? They're like, no, you have to find that on your own. I'm like,
can I live here?
Yeah, like, is there a cot in the basement? Because that's all, I kind of just want to work here. I know nothing about anything. And so, yeah, it was super easy. And then, like, a couple weeks later, they called and said, I got it. Now, here's the funny thing. 5 months later, everyone, the Daily Show was amazing. I can get back to that in a second. But everyone really liked me because I worked really hard and stuff like that because I loved being there. But as I was about to leave, they go, you know, Adam, funny thing, when you sent in your letter 6 months ago, we actually passed it around the office because we half of us thought you were a stalker and the other half thought you were really genuine. And the reason we called you up there was to basically find out which one you were.
Oh, yeah, shit.
It did. And it was, I was like, oh my God. Rian's like, yeah, it came off a little strong. I'm like, oh, I'm sorry, guys. I was really enthusiastic. I love this show.
So if you come up as a stalker, it may be a benefit sometimes.
Apparently. I mean, you got to be like maybe that stalker intent, but with the nicest.
Not a creepy stalker.
Right. No. I was just a really hard worker, and I just don't want to be here real bad and, you know, gumption and stuff. Because we actually did. We dealt with a few stalkers in my tenure there. We had, you know, people kind of just showing up, just kind of waiting outside, looking at the camera, trying to get in.
Just like, it was. John.
Yeah. It was.
Where's John? He was in there.
Yeah.
He works here. I've seen him.
It was crazy. It was really crazy having to, you know, deal with these people, like phone calls. Of people just kind of breathing, you know, asking for John. Like, it's like
a horror movie.
A little bit. Like, I was very surprised at that element. Like, I know it exists. Like, you know, logically, it exists. But to actually kind of be on the other side of the phone call when they're trying to reach him, like, oh, okay, yeah, just let me put you on hold for a second.
I'll connect you right to him.
Oh, you get him. John, come here.
He's actually waiting for your call, so hold on.
Oh, jeez.
And how crazy is it? Because I've definitely, like, clean-shaved my face, dressed up for job interviews, and I go in, and it's just people in T-shirts and jeans. Like, you know, it's the second you leave, you're just like, look at this guy dressing up and shaving his face and getting a haircut and just, like, snickering at it in the back corner of the office.
He thinks we're serious.
He takes life really serious. What an idiot.
We just invited you here to see what you look like. That was it.
Definitely
happened to me.
What was the craziest thing that happened to you while being on The Daily Show or intern at The Daily
Show?
There's a couple of really cool stories. One, I met a bunch of really famous people at the time. Sir Patrick Stewart.
Right, you got that right.
Yep, got to get that right. He earned it. Joshua Jackson was there, and he is tall as fuck. Like, I'm 6 foot, so I think like, oh, I'm a pretty tall guy. He's like 6'3". Like, it's
wow.
He is a tall drink of water. Some other really cool people. Obviously, all the people that, because I was there at the heyday back when Colbert and Steve Carell and Ed Helms and Samantha Bee was just getting hired at that time.
Was John Oliver there?
No, John Oliver showed up a couple years after I left.
Okay.
But they were all just super cool guys. Everyone was super. Actually, I was my first day there. I was in a package. I was in one of the sketches because I was learning the building and learning everyone's names. I was passing out like a new phone tree or whatever stupid assignment they gave me to just kind of like walk around and do something. And a couple of the producers kind of pulled me aside and says, "Hey, you kind of look like Wayne Gretzky from a distance. What are you doing tonight?" And I was like, nothing except going back to my shoebox of an apartment at the YMCA. And they're like, do you want to come to Chelsea Piers with us? And I was like, I don't even know what that is, but if I'm going to be on the show, then yes, I will do whatever you ask of me. And so I dressed up as Wayne Gretzky and was in a package.
Like full gear and everything?
I had to find a Wayne Gretzky jersey somewhere in the city.
Well, in New York, that couldn't have been too hard.
It was a little hard.
Really?
At the time. Yeah, it was a little hard, but I did eventually find it, went out and bought it, and then we went over, I wore the jersey, and had like slacks on or whatever, and they kind of just filmed me from a distance, because I kind of, you know, resemble them a little bit, and then up close, they just kind of cut my head off, so it's just my body kind of shaking hands, and being Wayne Gretzky. And I was on the show, like, 2 days later, which was awesome. And then I was on the show a couple more times, but just like in pictures and like a quick flashback. But it was super, like the first day I'm on the show.
That's awesome.
My first day there. And it was pretty cool. And now I get to say, because I was on The Daily Show. So I get to say, from The Daily Show, yeah, this guy.
That's really funny. Yeah, they're like, that conversation that went down. They're like, hey, Carl, come here. Doesn't Adam kind of look like Wayne Gretzky? Just like, you just look at the side of his face from a distance.
Yeah.
That's really totally awesome.
It was awesome. But the best thing that ever happened there, and the reason I'm in stand-up is because most of the guys there were just like, hey, you're pretty funny. You should go do stand-up. Because everyone there, you shouldn't be surprised, does some form of comedy. It'd be mm-hmm. stand-up or improv or sketch. Everyone does something. So, you know, just walking around, knowing everybody for a while, working with them, they're like, hey, Adam, you're a pretty funny guy. You should do this. Go do stand-up. Just trust us. Go do it. And everyone started pushing me. Like, Ed Helms pulled me aside at one point and, like, he's like, oh, you know, I've been doing it for 7 years or whatever, blah, blah, blah. Like, you should do it. Watch this, you know, watch the movie Comedian, you know, get a book and just start going up and doing it. And I was like, I can't. I mean, if the fucking Daily Show, if the whole, everyone at the Daily Show says, go do something, I'm like, oh, I'll go do it. But it still took me, like, months to build up the courage to go do it.
So you hadn't done any stand-up prior to that, then?
No, none. I didn't even know that I was capable of it. I just thought, like, I'll just show up. I'm funny on camera. Just give me words. I'll say them, and I'll be a goober. But I'm so, everyone's like, go do it, go do it, go do it. And then I was like, I don't know if I should because it's so hard and it takes years. Nah. But one day I worked for the audience coordinators a lot, which is basically like someone would call in the show asking for tickets for a future date when they come to the city. And I just call them back. Hi, I'm Adam from The Daily Show. I see you coming in such and such. We have tickets available these few days. But because I got to do that, I got to go into the studio to watch the show being taped. To help the audience coordinators deal with the audience. Uh-huh. I'm sure you guys are aware, like, John takes questions before the show.
Yeah.
And one day while I was in there, somebody asked, hey, how do I get to become an intern at The Daily Show? And John goes, geez, I don't even know. Is there an intern here? And I looked over at my boss, and she's like, yeah, go ahead. And I go, back here, sir! And he goes, hey, what's it like being an intern? And without missing a beat, I go, you get used to the beatings. And John starts cracking up. The audience starts laughing. And I was like, oh, okay. I'm going to be a comic. Okay. This is it. This is my life now.
That's a pretty cool moment. That's
It's great. Like, and I honestly, one of my career goals or just goals in life is to somehow be interviewed by him sometime in the future and then tell that story. By the way, you made me. You're responsible for everything I did. It's pretty cool.
That's an amazing, like, start to doing any stand-up. Like, that might be the best story. It's like John Stewart, like, pushed you, or like, you got a laugh from John Stewart. You're like, this is it. This is the turning point right here.
Well, he's basically Mike Carson, you know, from, it's awesome. I hope I can tell him that one day. That'd be really cool.
So you had grown up watching The Daily Show. You were a huge Jon Stewart fan prior to getting the internship. I mean, obviously, you made your show in college based off of The Daily Show, so mm-hmm. you had been big into Jon Stewart ahead of time.
Yeah. Well, watching the old Daily Show with Kilborn back in the 90s. I remember when Jon took over, I was really against it. Like, no, this is going to suck. Who's this guy from MTV and those stupid failed shows? This is gonna be stupid, and it was. It wasn't. It was weird for a while, until they found their groove.
And when they told you should try comedy, did you go about, like, right after that? Did you start kind of writing material or practicing it, or did you just kind of put it off for a long time until you decided to go on stage?
Well, one of the soon to be executive producer of the show, Rory Albanese, was working at. Actually, another, a friend of Kevin's, by the way.
Okay.
He was working in the post-production section, and I used to hang out there a lot helping him out. And he suggested that I get a book called The Comedy Bible. I don't know if you guys are aware of that book. Yeah, it's a really cool book. This is how you write a stand-up joke. Like, here's the step-by-step process of how you do it. He said, go buy this book and read it. And so I read it, and, like, here's the formula that all jokes follow. Go at thee. And so I started writing. I stayed late at the show after everyone left to use their, because I was living in a YMCA for the semester, which I pick your smallest closet. That was the size of it. There was a loft bed, a TV on the wall, a tiny little refrigerator for some food, and a little desk. With no internet.
Wow.
Just, it was maybe 6x9. And I lived there for 5 months. And I only worked at the show 3 days a week. So
you were hardly ever home, really. Like, you didn't want to be in your home when you were trying to do as much other stuff as you could, huh?
Just the exact opposite.
Really?
I was scared of this city. I was scared to death of New York City. I stayed in that box most of the time just because I didn't know. I didn't really have anyone here in the city. I wasn't really friends with anybody. I didn't know what to do. I didn't have the money to go do anything. So I was like, I'll just sit here and watch Power Rangers and other whatever else is on television because there was just nothing to do. But once I started figuring out that I wanted to do stand-up, and I read the book and started, doing some of the lessons and stuff like that. I stayed late a bunch of times using their computers to just, write stuff out and emailing it to myself and just trying to figure out how to do this whole crazy thing.
That's pretty crazy, man. You did work with Kevin Bartini, as you mentioned earlier, just mm-hmm. a second ago. You played in his short film, Me and Me. You played the conjoined twin that was dead. Talk to us about that.
Okay, so Kevin and I met a few years after I left the show. I mean, I didn't want to leave the show. Like, they said, I want to work here. They're like, that'd be great, but we have no jobs. So kicked out on my own. A few years later, Kevin and I bumped into each other, and it was like, oh, you were Daily Show intern? So was I. Holy crap, we should be friends. And so we worked on a bunch of different little projects for a couple of the comics here and there. And then Kevin said, hey, I have this idea for the short film. Do you want to help? Of course I want to help. So I was like, great, you're going to be my dead conjoined twin. I was like, okay. So here's some stage makeup. Paint your face to be paler than you already are. And he got two condoms, stuffed two loaves of bread into one of them, and then put the other condom on the opposite end to kind of... have this horrible to make it look like we had like a tube connecting us, yeah. So much we weren't like connected at the hip until like a fucking intestine. And he's like, no, we'll just go around the city with my flip cam and we'll just film us in different scenarios and you're just dead the entire time. I was like, sure, why the hell not? That's fine. So I mean, we went around. Jeez, we went around. We were in Central Park.
That was one of my favorite scenes where you were just laying there as he's getting massaged.
Massaged.
Turn around.
Right?
What the fuck is this?
Or when he's in the boat and he's just going in circles.
Yeah, it was fun doing it because it was so crazy and I could hear people watching and talking. It's like, is that guy dead? What's happening? Because I couldn't see the camera. Because, the flip camera was like, the size of our iPhones now. So everyone didn't know it was actually being filmed. The person massaging Kevin, no idea what was going on. She had no clue.
That oh, really?
He just didn't tell her ahead of time. She didn't.
I think Kevin awesome. Tried. I don't know if English was her first language. But she's just massaging Kevin. And I'm dead on the ground. Not even paying attention. We did that. We tried to we actually had a stop in front of what's his name? Carlin. George Carlin's home building where he grew
really?
Up. We kind of walked past there for a second to have a little scene. I don't know if it made it in the final cut. Kevin pushed me around in one of those push carts or whatever that you see old people stuff. We went to the Modern Museum of Metropolitan Museum of Art because I had a hat on and had like the makeup ready, right? Had the hat on, so I was trying to hide, so no one knew that we were trying to get a gorilla film something in the MoMA. I don't think that stuff made it in the film, but it was fucking funny because we're just kind of sitting there. Kevin's looking at art, and I'm like, just being dumb.
You had the car sex scene. That was fun. How was that?
We tried a few different scenarios of how Kevin could have sex with somebody with me attached to him. But we couldn't figure out how to... Because one...
He told us about the bathroom attempt that just looked too real.
Yeah, that was our first idea. We snuck in to a public bathroom by the park across the street from his apartment. It was a men's room. We had to wait until the park service was like they're on like a loop or whatever. We had to wait for them to pass, jump in with our actress. Kevin and I cut out a hole in sheet metal just to have my my dumb head like by the hole. We filmed the whole thing, but it was super creepy. Like, it was a little creepier than we wanted to go for. It was funny. But yeah,
it was a little dirty. All those people were they were oblivious to that y'all were filming. Like, you were just laying on the ground, and this Asian woman's probably just like, "What is going on?"
Yeah, it was really weird. We had that at a bunch of places when we were filming, because most of the places we filmed were public, so no one had any kind of were very confused at not only seeing me as a dead guy, but also when they glimpsed the tube, which, by the way, kept getting more and more moldy as the shoot went on. Because
has it in his refrigerator.
Hell yeah, he still has it. That thing is a prop is epic. Because it kept getting moldy, so it looked more and more realistic. But when people, either when they saw me, they're really confused. And then when they saw the tube connecting us, they got like, what? Oh, it's like, Kevin wanted to just flaunt the tube between us just to freak people out. Because I think a lot of people actually thought we were conjoined twins. Because it was the bread and the condom in a nylon, just, that we tied to ourselves. So if you just kind of walk past us real fast, you're like, was that a fleshy tube connecting those two guys? I mean, it's New York. Everything is here. Right. So that is not out of the realm of possibilities.
Wasn't that surprising?
Yeah.
So you played a dead conjoined twin, and then I guess vampire is dead? You're not a vampire, though, in web series Bloodlight. That was pretty interesting. And you do play the funniest character in the whole thing, because you're just the random guy that appears and says stuff that you're just like, what? And you wear the same outfit.
Thanks. Yeah. Explain
us how the idea of that happened. Like, how did you guys, because that's hilarious.
Thanks. Well, the show, I was in between apartments and relationships at the time, and my friend Jared said he had this idea for this really cool show. It's a vampire satire show. Can you help me out on it? I was like, he went through a couple of iterations of the script, and I was like, yeah, I'll help you out on this. So we moved in together, and we started writing and coming up with ideas. And then eventually we started like, let's just film it. We started writing stuff, and I wasn't in the first couple of drafts. But he was all like, you know what? I got an idea for a character for you. You're ageless and timeless, and you're kind of slow, but you're like, kind of like the Doctor. Now, I didn't watch Doctor Who until later, but it was like, it's very much kind of doctory a little bit. And we started filming it, and we had a lot of fun doing it. And then, we just kept going with it because we had a lot of fun. We had a lot of great ideas. We scripted it out to like 5 seasons of all these ideas, all these tropes we could do, using vampires and other anonymous mythical creatures to be different things that we needed for satire. But yeah, it was a lot of fun. We shot the last 4 episodes of it inside of 5 days, which really? The last 4 episodes were like combined like 92 minutes or something like that. Because yeah, if you watch the whole thing, it was like the first 5 were like 5 minutes, and the last 4 were like between 15 and 20. Because we're like, fuck it,
You had to make multiple parts for them. Yeah.
Yeah, we just like, you know what? Let's prove that we can actually write an actual sitcom, a 22-minute script. And for the most part, we kind of did. So it was kind of an exercise of, let's see if we can do it. We did. You know what? The internet will follow along. They like this kind of stuff. And they're like, no, we're not going to sit around and watch something for 20 minutes. Because that was, like 4 or 5 years ago at this point.
Oh, it was that? I didn't even realize it was that long ago.
Oh, really?
Yeah, it's at least... I think about 4 years ago.
Well, I just discovered it, and so it's
I got up from work at 4 a.m. last night and stayed for like 5:30 watching them. I watched the episode 9, the parts 1 and 2, and I was almost rolling on the ground laughing when I realized that like the ending was like the usual suspects, and then they threw in the Kobayashi part. And I was like, gee, this is awesome. I'm gonna watch this. I have to watch the next episode now, or the previous episode.
Yeah, our director Chris wrote that episode, because Jared and I were writing the other three, and we're like, oh, I have this idea, because we, you know, basically, I don't know, was Community, no, wait, maybe Community was out at that time, but like 30 Rock and Archer and a couple other shows are like Always Sunny were like big influences on us. Uh-huh. And so we kind of wanted, you know, to be able to be a little meta and, you know, kind of throw in different things here and there. And I had the idea for doing a Usual Suspects episode. But since we were writing the other ones, our director's like, hey, can I write it? And we're like, hell yeah, you can write it. So he wrote that one. And it's just, it's like my favorite. Just because it's so, because we pulled off Usual Suspects in like 20 minutes. it was really funny. It was really good. Yeah, it was great. By the way, I don't know if you guys, this is a plug for our director friend, Chris Russell. He made this movie a year after we finished doing Bloodlight called Zombie in a Penguin Suit. What? Which, yeah, he made a short film called Zombie in a Penguin Suit, which, if you have not seen it, it went like viral almost immediately. It was like 3 years ago, 2 or 3 years. Yeah, I think it was 3 years ago. And it's exactly what it is. It's a zombie in a penguin suit. Now he's in L.A. being a director because of the short film.
That's awesome.
So he's doing some awesome stuff. So like I kind of know like L.A. directors now because, it's pretty cool.
I know the big wigs.
I know. I got some connections. You know, help a guy start his career. Yeah, we can do.
Well, another thing that I did in my research for this was I found out that you kind of Bloodlight kind of got big on Reddit, and then you turned that into, I think, do you host a Reddit kind of comedy show?
So yeah, what happened?
Explain that all.
Sure. I had no idea what Reddit was. I know it's the site's been around for about 7 years. Our fifth episode of Bloodlight was basically our rant against why we hate Olivia Munn. Because at the time, she just got on The Daily Show. And so it's been, you know, that's been a few years ago. But I don't find her funny. And I thought she basically, you know, and so did Jared. Like, he hated her because she was just kind of a fake nerd and was kind of just, I'm beautiful and attractive, and I'll do funny things so nerds will like me. And we're like, when she was on The Daily Show, that hurt my soul. Because, I mean, I worked there. I know these people. I was like, oh, why would you hire her of all people?
What do you really think of her?
But, so we wrote this episode. Basically, it had nothing to do with vampires. It's just all to do about us. This is our point of view of why The Daily Show hiring Olivia Munn was a bad idea. And one of our friends posted it on Reddit, and it got 25,000 views inside of 3 days. Wow. So it's like, holy shit, what is this site? Reddit. Oh my God, it's so cool. Look at all the cat pictures and the dick pics. This is amazing. So I started, I had a very rough beginning time with Reddit because, I didn't know the rules of the site. I tried to utilize it more. Now you can watch other episodes and like, fuck you, that's not what this is for. Like, whoa, okay, I don't know, I'm sorry. But I hung around and like learned the site and started talking to different people on it and being a part of the community a little bit. And eventually there was in the stand-up sites, in the stand-up subreddits, somebody mentioned, hey, we should do a stand-up show for Reddit here in New York City. And I replied to the posting and said, hey, I'm a comic. I'm also a Redditor. I really like this stuff. I'll help out. And so me and this guy, Nathan, we started the Reddit show. Now, unfortunately, that show doesn't exist anymore.
Oh.
Because it went away because of craziness and politics and other weird things. That sucks. But I'm still on Reddit, still trying to do stuff.
The whole concept behind it was just genius, I think, in the fact that everybody had the same idea and you just put them all in the same room.
Yeah. Hopefully I would like to try to do it again. You know, but basically, you know, there are lots of funny people online. Hey, just come see them live. It's nothing too crazy. I know there are other Reddit shows, around the city and in different cities. Like I know DC tries to have one. I'm sure LA has tried to have one here and there. I think it's good for people to support live comedy because, you know, the internet is basically free. But, you know, there's a lot of really good, talented people out there who deserve to have a little bit of a following.
Who were some of your favorite comics growing up? And I guess now, who are some of your favorite comics?
Well, I grew up in the Comic Relief era. Mm-hmm. So I loved watching that stuff when I was a kid. I didn't understand most of it, but I did love it. Especially like when they had, there was one part or scene or sketch between Whoopi, Robin, and Billy Crystal where their dicks were talking, everyone's dicks were talking, and then Robin Williams just kind of juts in between Whoopi Goldberg's legs and then starts doing her talking vagina. I don't know why that's there, but it's like, it was like, that's what, but like growing up, well, I was, when cable was around back in the 90s, there wasn't Comedy Central. It was two channels. It was the Comedy Channel and Ha. And so they just played different, remember the show The A-List? Or those kind of like mix-up shows where they had like four comics do 7 minutes or whatever, or just here's a 2 minute bit from one comic, here's another 2 minute bit, here's a 1 minute bit.
Yeah, they had a lot of those. I remember watching.
Had
that.
So many of those. I watched a ton of those, and the staying up late, like because a lot, there's a lot of stand up on cable because they needed content and they just had nothing. So, hey, stand up's pretty easy to. And cheap. We can throw
a camera in a room and just get people to stand up.
Yeah. So, like, I mean, George Carlin was big, and I really liked him as a kid. The Comic Relief stuff. But it wasn't until, like, really college, because I wasn't paying attention to names. I was just kind of absorbing all of the stand-up stuff and just really, like, taking a shine to it, but having no idea that I could actually do it.
Yeah.
But until, like, I know this is cliche now, but you know, like Louis, Bill Burr, Jon Stewart, Patton Oswalt. I tend to go more towards Patrice O'Neill. Like, I really love smart stand-ups. Like, it hits me at my core of like, yes, that's smart. It's clever. It's also it says something culturally aware. And it's fucking funny.
Did you see what Louis did this week with taking on the bigger women or fat women and the
double
standard? I did.
I watched. Well, here's the thing. I haven't watched that show in years. And the reason why, you know what? I'm probably dumb and I should go back and watch it. But that first season, I wasn't really a fan of it because I feel really stupid saying this out loud now. I wanted the show to be like what Louis is on stage, you know, kind of, you know, him, you know, he's like, no, my kids are dumb. This is dumb, whatever, you know, just, you know, kind of rebelling against what he, you know, the shit life gives at him.
Yeah.
That's what a lot of a stand-up is you know, he, but in the show, it's so more realistic where he's like, no, I'm just going to take it and lose all the time. I was like, no, I love you. Don't lose. I want to see you win at least a little bit. Come on. But since the whole first season was him just, you know, repeatedly being in an awkward situation,
kind of
losing.
Accepting it.
Yeah, I was like, this isn't fun for me because I don't want to see you lose. But I keep hearing all this amazing stuff, and I read an article and saw the clip of it, and I was like, wow, yeah, that is exactly. That's the kind of comedy I just fucking love so much.
Because it's easy to take like the obvious side on it, like most men would, but then he was just like, watch this, I can throw it back in my own face.
Mm-hmm. Well, that's one of the things. But I've been doing this 10 years now, doing stand-up 10 years. And I'm sure you guys are aware, that's how long they say it takes, you know, to at least get a voice and kind of be like, oh, hey, you don't suck. You're actually kind of good now. You still have a long way to go, but you're finally like, hey, I'm actually good and competent at this.
How many people do you see that, like, get into comedy and they're just like, I'm going to break through right away. I'm hilarious. People are going to love me, and I'm going to be famous in 2 weeks.
All of
they
them
just burn out.
All of them.
It's the classic blunder. And the problem is everyone's susceptible to it because I did it too. Because when you get that first laugh, you're like, well, that's it. I'm obviously amazing. I can do at least easy another hour of this material. It's fantastic. Watch out, everybody. I have arrived. And it's annoying as fuck now because you go. The cycle is. You kind of suck it, you know, a little. You're very nervous at the beginning. Your first show's like, oh, God, I don't know if I'm going to be very good. And then so usually your first set is like, you're just fine. Some people chuckle, you know, a couple of jokes maybe bomb, but for the most part, it's just like, everything is fine. And then after that, you just start bombing consistently for like 3 years. You just suck.
Wow.
And then after that, you're like, you know, oh, okay, maybe I got a couple of jokes now. I'm not that bad. You know, you're getting laughs and stuff like that, but not like sustained super laughs. You know, you're still like, your friends are kind of coming to bringer shows and like, oh yeah, that's kind of, ha ha ha. Yeah, okay. Then you get about, you know, 5 to 6 years in, and then it's kind of like, okay, I've kind of paid some dues. It sucked a lot. I'm starting to get a little bit better. I'm kind of figuring out how to write for myself. You get okay. And then you get immediately disillusioned because you're like, fuck, there are still so many of us around. I feel like I should be getting more attention than I am. Fuck that guy. Fuck that. How is that girl doing? You're only playing off your looks. God damn it. You just get really disillusioned and angry with everything because it's like, I'm fucking good now. I deserve to be in the clubs and doing road gigs and But then that kind of goes away because that's when I started doing Bloodlight. When I was about 5 to 6 years in, because I was like, I should do something else because fuck this comedy stuff. Oh, I'm funny, but this isn't working. I got to try something else. Then I'd get over it. And you're like, nah, it's fucking whatever. It's fine. You can't be jealous of everybody else. This is your own path, and you're figuring your own stuff out. Then you just kind of start to get quiet and kind of, you know, introspective and like, okay, let me figure out myself a little bit more. What do I want to say? How do I say it? Okay. Because you can tell when the pro mentality comics are the quiet ones.
Yeah.
I still go to mics to practice because, you know, it's a good place to practice. And a lot of people are like, man, open mics suck. And yeah, they do, but
practice sucks.
Yeah, you play like you practiced. You got it. You got to tell these jokes. I mean, not all of us. Like, I'd love to be in some clubs. I still have to break into some clubs here in the city. So it's not like I'm getting, you know, I can't practice, you know, brand new jokes in a room full of 20 people. So, or actual people, not comics. So I was like, no, dude, it's still a viable option. Go play like you practiced. Go try them out. Figure some stuff out. You'd be surprised. You can still work stuff out in front of comics.
What's the difference between performing in front of comics and then performing in front of people that actually came in to see comics?
It's a big difference because comics
gonna be harder on you.
Comics, the people will be harder on you a little bit, but they'll also be easier to, because they don't know the magic. They haven't seen behind the curtain.
Mm-hmm.
So you just need to tell jokes in front of, you know, normal a normal audience, and they're like, oh, okay, that's kind of funny. In front of comics, you're like, yeah, I'm up in two. I'm worried about my set right now. I don't really care about your clever quip. But yeah, but luckily I've gotten to the point where I know what's funny. Like, I have a better sense of, okay, this is gonna be funny. I just need to practice it in front of people to kind of work it out myself. If I get comics to laugh, that's great. But I have a better, because I've done it enough. It was like, oh, the general public will probably laugh at this line. But yeah, for the most part, yeah, it's easier. It's better to work in front of normal people, obviously, because they'll be, oh, this is a punchline, this is a punchline, this is a punchline. But you got to say the joke at least 6 to a dozen times to get, you know, to get comfortable with it, to get the timing right. And it's fine to do that in front of comics. I mean, sometimes they'll laugh, but other times they won't. It's not a big deal if they don't laugh.
How often do you do open mics?
I try to do them at least once a day, at least, you know, maybe hit a couple. Because I'm bouncing back and forth with stuff, with different projects and different late-night responsibilities here and there. So I try to hit like 4 or 5 a week and try to get a couple shows in there as well. But it's all a process because, I mean, I'm doing a lot of different stuff, which is the other thing. Once you kind of get into it, you're like, oh, I'm doing a new web series now, so I'm working on that. And then stand-up.
Gigahose?
Gigahose, yes.
Gigahose.
It's a sex bot web series, which I cannot. We just finished funding. We got all our funding on Kickstarter. We have a couple days left, before it actually closes. But we did hit our funding goal. But yeah, we're gonna film a web series about sex robots in the future, and we are gonna have sex in the show. Like, we are going to have cable level sex, not HBO, more like if like FX, like Archer. We're having Archer level sex is going to be in the show. Yeah, I'm really looking forward to it because no one else has done it yet. No one's touched sex bots, and
it's a good idea.
I'm very excited. Yeah, I'm very excited about this. I really want this to be great because no one's done it yet. No one's touched sex bots.
When can we expect to see that?
We're hoping to film it starting in June and shoot through the summer. Hoping to get a weekly release this fall. Probably, I'm hoping September, October for just to start the show off. We have 12 episodes. They're all about 8 to 10 minutes long. And they're just, it's just full of, it's a robot sex comedy. It's the easiest way to put it.
It's its own genre.
It really is. because, well, Almost Human got canceled. And then Her was a success. And I know there are other, like, you know, lots of people have been talking about robots lately because AI and all this other stuff's kind of, you know, seems to be getting closer and closer and closer. And we're like, hey, we're going to have sex with robots. Like, no one, people keep putting it off. Like, no, you don't understand. As soon as we get AI, we're going to fuck it. Like, that's
like, going to happen.
It's going to happen. Like, guys, the three of us, we will have sex with robots in our lifetime. Guaranteed, it's going to happen.
I'd try it.
Yeah, I think most people I've been reading, I have like Google alerts and stuff on my to see like when people are talking about sex robots and stuff like that.
Uh-huh.
And there have been a bunch of articles recently about, oh, like 1 in 5 people, I think this was like a UK study, say they'll have sex with a robot. I was like, no, it's more like 4 out of 5. They just do not.
Yeah, 1 out of 5 is just brave enough to say it in public.
Exactly right.
We're all thinking it.
Oh my god, we so are.
How, what kind of weird Google alerts? Because that's kind of a weird thing to get Google alerts about. Like, what is the weirdest Google alert that you've gotten from that? Strangest, most obscure one.
Oh, there's been. Well, I have it set for sex robots, sex bots, and gigahose. And of course, no one's talked about gigahose yet, even though I've been trying. But there have been. Some people have put out articles, you know, like kind of postulating what will happen in the future and like 20, but the greatest stuff is when somebody wrote something that was in an English newspaper or at least an English newspaper site, and then a bunch of conservative blogs picked up on it and started talking about it, and just the level of it's the great Satan, these people are going to ruin society. Rabble, rabble, rabble. And I was like, this is amazing. I want this. I one of my goals, I would love for the show to be at least popular enough. Because, I mean, obviously, like, nerds, I hope when nerds find out about it, like, the internet at large, like, oh, dude, a show about, you know, a funny show about sex robots, fuck yeah, I'll watch this.
Yeah.
But hopefully it gets popular enough just so Christian conservative blogs and websites just start, like, oh, what is this that the kids are watching online? This is the worst. Oh, I want that. I want that spite. I want that hate directed towards me so badly, because that means I'm doing something right. It would be so cool to have like the entire Christian right wing just to hating on me and the show. Oh,
just to get like Westboro Baptist Church to just say God hates fags, God hates robots.
You made it. You made
God
it.
God hates robots.
Oh my god, God hates sex robots? If someone in real life were picketing, oh, that would be great. Oh, I would love that so much. Oh.
I think that would be the point when you know that like this is a big
I made it. I fucking made it. I know we had when Kevin, my co-writer Kevin and I we're plotting out the show. We do actually have, I think in the future season, we have a right-wing, basically West Baptist, Baptist Church, as like characters who start this religious movement against sex robots. So to have it, like, we'd love to talk about it in the, you know, a couple seasons down the line, but to have it happen in real life,
that would be awesome.
Oh, yeah,
start a campaign. Travels to high schools, why robots are bad and humans are better. Just had a whole like PowerPoint presentation with little animations and stuff.
They stopped teaching abstinence just to be like, okay, fine. No, humans, you gotta have sex with humans. Oh,
let's talk about the real issues. There's robots having sex with people.
Yes. That would be great. Oh, I'm stealing that.
Go ahead.
Thank you.
We do a segment every week, or lately okay. We've started a segment called Answers, and we get our emailers and Twitter followers to email us on pastthegravypod@gmail.com.
Hold on, before we do this, did you have a stint at Fox News?
Oh, yeah.
I really wanted to touch.
How did you get on Fox News?
And okay. Like, what was it like? Yeah.
Okay. Here's what happened. This is the stupidest fucking. Okay. So I've been bouncing around the city for years now, doing all sorts of odd jobs just so I would not work a 9-to-5. One of them was like a promotional gig where I dressed up like a leprechaun for Irish Spring's new body wash. This is like, that was a couple years ago, like 4 or 5 years ago, I think, where they did a trial run with three of us just dressed up as leprechauns running around the Bryant Park area, basically Midtown New York. Uh-huh. Just kind of running around being leprechaun-y or whatever. It was just dumb. It's just the dumbest fucking thing. But people seem to respond to it. The corporations seem to like it. So they tripled down and had 25 actors dress up as leprechauns and run around the city for a couple hours to promote this new Irish Spring body wash. And they taped it and they, you know, made little flyers or I think maybe a little commercial. I'm not quite sure. But stupid. So they had such a good time taping us running around the city that they're like, hey, St. Patrick's Day is almost here. Let's keep 10 of them and then have them dress up and go on the morning shows. So me and 5 other guys went to Fox and Friends and a couple other guys went to like the CBS morning show. So we were on Fox and Friends one morning for the whole show, like just kind of off to the side being the Irish Spring Leprechauns and we're doing jigs and just acting stupid. And I was fucking on Fox and Friends, the actual show. But then there's also an after show that's only online. I don't know if they still do it. But after the show was done taping, they was like, okay, now we're going to tape this internet-only after show that we have. And so they invited all of us at the couch. So it was Steve Doocy, the brown-haired guy that's not Steve Doocy, and Gretchen Carlson there on the couch. And now I did not know who – how bad these people were at the time, just because I don't think the Daily Show was talking about them so much. And I didn't think they had the thing on SNL yet of just how horrible these three people are. So I didn't know that yet, but I do know that Steve Doocy is from the Washington D.C. area.
Nice.
So yay. So we're all sitting around on their couch. And they're all trying to be like smart Alex with us, and they're just dumb as rocks. They're not clever. They're not quick witted at all.
Now you know exactly why they're made fun of so much.
Right. So they ask a couple of us to do a jig or whatever, and I had to get into the building. We needed to have our IDs on us, but we weren't allowed to bring backpacks or anything like that. So we had to keep them on our person. But we're wearing these leprechaun outfits. We didn't have any pockets. So I kept my ID in my sock. So we're dancing around or whatever, and fucking Steve Doocy sees that I have my ID in my sock, and he goes, hold on a second. And we're all supposed to be doing stupid Irish accents, and I am not good at accents at all. And he goes, hey, what's that in your sock? And I go, it's my ID. And so he makes me pull out my ID, and he's like, who's Adam Lash? I'm like, are you fucking... throwing me under the bus, you dumb fuck. Like I wanted to say all that, but like
you should have.
I totally should have, and then got tossed out of the building. I made something up. I have no idea what I said, but I kind of like tried to make him look like an idiot for being just dude. We're doing it. You know what we're doing. You asked
just
us here.
Douche just fucking ruined it.
Yeah. So fuck that guy. But yeah, I was on Fox and Friends. It was awesome. The dumbest fucking thing.
That was a great story. I like that.
It's definitely something for the highlight reel.
Yes. If I could go back and find it, I would definitely put that on.
I wish we could have video of that right now. why don't we do our answer segment here? We'd like you to participate in it.
Mm-hmm.
Like I said earlier, you can email us your questions by going to passthegravypod@gmail.com, and you can tweet us at passthegravypod on Twitter. Also, make sure to follow Adam Lash on Twitter @TheAdamLash, correct?
That is correct.
And check out his website, AdamLashComedy.com. Our first question of the week comes from Megan Rochard, and she asks, how much older does your love interest have to be before you can be accused of having grandpa issues?
I think in light of this question, Donald Sterling is like the spotlight right now.
That would be grandpa issues.
Yeah, he's got that going on, yeah.
That guy is so old and creepy. You've seen the Anderson Cooper.
Oh my God! He does not have any PR person. He has no PR person because they would have smashed those cameras and said, "Get the fuck off the screen.
Delete the evidence. Shred everything.
Shut your fucking mouth, Donald."
Are there such a thing as grandpa issues or just gold digging issues? Because
it's a fine line, I guess.
It's a fine line.
No poor grandpa is getting that 20 to 30-year-old ass, you know?
Right, there's...
shoemakers banging, you know?
Exactly.
Are there chicks that are really just into old dudes? Like old, saggy, old balls and stuff? Like, is that what they're into? Or like, are they only into the rich guys?
They gotta be only into the rich. I mean, women, they have standards. I mean, right?
You'd think.
Yeah.
You have standards unless he has money. Unless he has money, then you have.
Yeah, then you're playing the long game. Like, I want some financial security. In 20 years, I will put up with this, his old wrinkly balls. Did they have sex?
I hope not.
I mean, for
her
sake.
I hope so for him.
For all the fallout,
he better be getting something.
Does he deserve sex? I mean.
You think he just had racist hate sex the whole time?
Just fueled by anger.
I hate the blacks so much.
I've heard hate fucking is a cool thing.
I guess,
but racial hate fucking. I mean, maybe. I mean, he was alive when there were slaves, right? So
he looks like it.
Yeah, though that guy needs to change his posture because the way he sits, it just looks like his face just melts into his chest.
Right? Oh,
he has no neck. His face just kind of dribbles down, and then there's his chest.
So how much older would you have to be considered grandpa issues then? I guess 30 to 40 years different.
I think so.
I think 30 years is it. I mean, because if you're 30 and then someone's born, you know, that's kind of weird. Because by the time she's 25, what are you?
Right.
I'm terrible at math. Yeah, I just realized how bad at math I am.
Not a math major, okay. I'm not supposed to solve rocket science.
Where's my calculator? I need it now for the important things.
Well, let's move on to our next question from Chris Twelman, and he asks, is it weird for a guy to prefer baths over showers?
That's a good question.
I don't think so. I think men deserve to pamper themselves every now and then.
Do you take a bath every now and then, Adam?
No.
I do.
I never got the idea of like just like bathing in my own filth.
Usually if I do it, I'm drinking, though. So
yeah, I can see
which
that.
Which makes for a whole sad Saturday afternoon.
Do you ever sit down in the shower like after you're hammered? You're like, I just gotta sober up for a second. I'm gonna sit down and just take a nap.
Just freezing cold water pelting over your body.
Well, you make sure the hot water's working.
No, you put cold water. It's more sobering.
Because, Adam, you said you do not think it's weird for a guy to prefer baths over showers.
No, I mean if you're capable of taking a bath, I mean go for it. That's luxurious. I don't have that ability here. My shower in the city is a shower stall, so no bathtub for me. But yeah, I would not begrudge a man taking some me time and sudsing it up. I assume it's a bubble bath.
Lighting some candles, reading.
Sure, put some bath salts in there for the Mozart
background.
Why not?
You know, what would be weird is if like like YMCAs and Lifetime Fitnesses had bathtubs just for that reason, because they only have showers. Just like, yeah, the treat yourself bathtub.
Want to get away? Why are kids nagging you? Come on down to the gym. A
couple of those Cialis bathtubs just kind of sitting there.
Oh, my God.
So two guys can just kind of be holding hands like, no, man, I know those feels. It's all good. It's all right, man. Fake sunset and painted on the wall.
Yeah. Oh, just hold hands and watch it. We can get it. I'm relaxing. Fine, you know, the family's gone. Family's not here. All right, our third question of the week from William Clark Wilson. He asks, wiping back to front? We're front to back.
Does it matter? We're guys.
Right? I've always been a front to back kind of guy. I don't understand why I would start in the back.
It's easier. It's the lazy ways back to front. But you could also get some fecal matter on your gooch area, which is why.
Which you don't want. You want to avoid that.
Yeah. I mean, I'm not smelling my gooch, and no one else really is either, so I wouldn't be worried about it.
I'm trying to actually picture, like, I don't even pay attention to which direction I'm going in because it doesn't truly matter because I'm a guy.
Yeah. Yeah.
I think I go front to back.
Yeah, I go front to back.
Yeah.
Curtis, what about you?
I go back to front.
Whoa. Retro.
I am left-handed. I don't know if that has anything to do with it.
But do you sit or stand when you wipe?
I sit.
You sit?
You sit?
Is that
really?
Weird?
You gotta do not the full stand up, but like the squat.
Yeah, chair pose. Like if you're doing yoga, it's a little chair pose, and then you gotta get back there.
Yeah.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
It gives you a lot more room, a lot more.
Exactly. More room to operate. Yeah.
I didn't know that was a thing.
Try it, Curtis. I think it'll open your eyes.
I'll try that in about 10 minutes, I swear.
All right. Well, why don't we go to our final question? And I don't know if this is as much of a question as an observation, but Matt. Huey? I'm not really sure how to pronounce his last name. He asks, is Rudy Tooty Fresh and Fruity just a fancy way of saying gay pancake? And I would assume he's referring to IHOP, but I think he may be onto something.
Is there such a thing
as a gay pancake?
Is there such thing as a straight pancake?
Flat pancake.
A flat pan. They're all flat. There's no square pan. There's no like box pancake.
I guess it's not a pancake if it's not flat.
That would just be a blob of sadness if you have.
What is the difference between a pancake and a hot cake?
I don't think there is.
No, I think they're one
they
of
the
same.
They are one and the same.
Is it just what's
the difference between a pancake and a crepe?
Where you eat them in countries?
Just the region.
If you're French. A pint of a crepe.
I thought crepe were just like really small pancakes.
I thought they were like weird grapes for the longest time.
I did too.
It sounds similar.
So I watched that Talladega Nights, and they broke down crepes and pancake difference really well.
And Talladega Nights is a very educational movie. I feel like you could learn a lot from it.
You learn about different cultures, see different side, different spectrums.
All right. Well, Adam, thanks for talking to us this week. Thanks for joining the show.
Oh, this is really fun, guys. I really appreciate it.
When Giga Hose launches, we'd like to have you back on. You can talk more about that.
Oh, that'd be amazing. Yeah, I'd love to come back on.
I'll try and keep you updated if I find any more robot sex stuff. I'll send it over your way.
I would appreciate that. Yeah.
Do you have anything you want to plug?
Yeah. What are your dates?
Upcoming dates?
Well, I'm just, bouncing around the city doing shows. Best thing to plug right now, I'm actually going to have a blog soon. I can keep you updated about that. It's called Advice I'll Never Give My Future Son. It's going to be a kind of I'm giving my future son the talk, but I'm from today's perspective to 20 years in the future. So just fun things about how to communicate with a girl via a telepathy helmet or how to deal with pimples in the future. Just, silly things like that. So you can look out for that. Obviously Giga Hose is coming soon. Sex robots, and I have I'm filming a bunch of little crazy sketches and stuff like that, putting up on my website. So yeah, just I'm doing all sorts of things right now. So just kind of keep a track, follow me on Twitter or you can head over to my website, doing all sorts of stuff.
At the Adam Lash on Twitter, Adam Lash Comedy on the interwebs. Thanks once again, buddy. It's been fun.
Thanks, guys. This is a lot of fun.
Sir. great.
Pass the gravy, bitches.